So basically start the first session. Today's session is going to deal with markets and trade, how they affect food security. My name is Caroline Baig. I'm from the Faculty of Agriculture and Environmental Sciences. I deal mainly with primary agricultural production, but my co-chair, Diane Vincent, is part of the Canadian International Trade Tribunal, so she has a deep interest in markets and trade, and she will handle the question period and do the summing up of the of this morning's event. So I would like to invite our first speaker, Neil Conklin, to come to the podium. Neil Conklin is president of the Farm Foundation, and before he joined the Farm Foundation, he was director of the Market and Trade Economics Division of USDA. He has also been chief economist of the Farm Credit Council. He has a vast knowledge of trade and markets and how they affect agriculture. So I'd like to have you give a warm hand of applause to our first speaker of the day, Neil Conklin.
Thank you. Bonjour. Good morning. It's a real pleasure to be here again this year. No, not mine. Sorry, sir. There we go. All right. We're now ready to go. It's a real pleasure to be here again after last year, and how much things have changed in a year. But I don't think that in any way diminishes the kind of concerns that we have looking forward about food security. Last year when I was here at this time, I talked about some of the work that we'd done looking at what was driving food prices. And in the wake of our work on food prices, we decided to undertake a longer-term project that we call the 30-year challenge, looking at the longer-term challenges that lie ahead of us. We engaged a group of leaders from the agricultural sector, both from the United States, but also we had some folks from Canada involved in this as well. And the group identified six challenges that agriculture faced going forward. Global financial markets and recession, which we saw as more than simply a short-term blip and disruption, but posing some longer-term issues as well. Global energy security, climate change, competition for natural resources, and global economic development, but perhaps most importantly, as the cornerstone of the challenges that we saw going forward, we saw food security. What's the imperative? Food security is a critical international security issue, and I can tell you that the national security establishment in the United States, people from the Department of Defense, the military, State Department, and so on within the U.S. government are viewing food security as a critical issue. And if you follow developments in Washington, you're aware that the current administration is making agricultural development one of their major thrusts and initiatives that they're putting some emphasis on, in large part because of the understanding after seeing food riots in 31 countries during last year's food price spikes, that long-term food security is truly a national security issue. But we will only be food secure if we are secure globally. This is something I want to emphasize, and it will lead me into where I'm going talking about the role of markets and trade. We will only be food secure, if we're secure globally. The fallacy of composition is that global food security can be achieved one nation at a time. Certainly, we have to have all nations be food secure, but you can take one nation and close it off and make it food secure, and have a bad effect on other nations that are trying to achieve the same thing. And certainly we saw good examples of this during the food price spike when countries imposed export taxes, other barriers to exports, beggar thy neighbor policies that drove up prices in the international market and made people in other countries less food secure. So it's important that we think globally. The realities. Here are three realities as we think globally that must be taken into account. First, the distribution of agroclimatic resources is not consistent with the distribution of our population or our income on this planet. Let's start with population. The big centers of population in the world are in South and East Asia, and those large population centers, the amount of agricultural resources, of land resources and water resources in particular, that remains will not be sufficient to deal with the levels of population as they increase in those countries if you view them in a closed sense. Income distribution, certainly as we get rising incomes in the developing world, hopefully as we look forward down the road, maybe it will be past my lifetime, but as we look forward down the road, we'll see more equitable distributions of income. But at least as of today, disposable income is not distributed equally around the globe. It's concentrated in developed countries, and that leads those countries to have demand for food and products that are not necessarily readily available in their own countries. So what's the prospect for equalizing these distributions? I think especially the land and water are relatively fixed. Populations, the idea of moving populations to put them in places where we can produce the food would raise a whole different set of cultural, political, and social issues. So we're stuck with unequal distributions, and markets and trade are the tools that we have to be able to deal with those realities of the world that we face. So markets and trade are essential to global food security, at least in my lifetime and probably all of ours. How do we get to reform? In the little piece on this part of the program, it talked about the difficulties and the failure of reform. We've seen Doha stall. We've seen the 2008 food crisis and the failure of the international trading system to deal with issues in a rising price environment where countries put on export restrictions. Our current system is not set up to deal with that. So the WTO was basically impotent in the face of beggar thy neighbor actions. But I do think that if we look back to our last major reform of our international institutions, which was post-World War II, when the International Monetary Fund, the GATT, and the World Bank were created, we see really what is essential if we are to achieve the reform we'll need to have markets work in a way that will help to make us globally food secure. First, we need an imperative, and the imperative was there at the end of World War II. People were afraid that we were going back to a global depression. And the other one is leadership. And that's what this conference is all about. I want to say that we have no shortage of creative thinking, of ideas that it will take to achieve the kind of reform that we need. As a part of our 30-year challenge project, Farm Foundation sponsored an essay competition on new policy ideas. We had 38 entries. My co-panelist, Doug Headley, was one of our judges. Our panel of distinguished judges selected 7 papers out of these 38, and the press release went out yesterday announcing the winners of our competition. One of those papers is directly on target with this session. It's a paper by Jean-Philippe Gervais, Moving Agricultural Trade Liberalization Forward to Improve Global Food Security. I'm not going to steal Jean-Philippe's thunder, and Farm Foundation, as a non-advocacy organization, doesn't push particular proposals. But I would commend it to you as a very thoughtful piece and as a place to start discussion on what we can do to try to achieve reform in our in our international trading system that we will need if we are to be food secure. You can find it on our internet site. With that, I just want to stress again what we are going to need. What we need is imperative, and I think after last year's food price spikes, we do have that imperative. The next step is creativity and leadership, and I hope that that people in this group will be helping to provide part of that as we move forward. Thank you.